Welcome to another inspiring message recorded at Rivers Church.
So tonight, I thought I'm just going to share two stories with you to start off. And the first one was, you know, it happened in about August this year. I had a weekend off. And what I decided to do is I love taking road trips. And I love taking road trips with this bucky I have. It's a caddy bucky. It's old. But I enjoy it. And so this particular Sunday, I happened to have a road trip with my daughter. And we were going, and I had all these plans, you know, going to the Midlands. So you leave early in the morning, and you can plan your day, make all the stops. And, you know, I like all the antique places and stuff like that. And so we were leaving. We were on our way, and we left quite early in the morning. And I was looking forward to the day. I had planned to stop at Chocolate Heaven. You know, you have to stop at Chocolate Heaven when you go to the Midlands. And then eventually we get to Pietermaritzburg. And so at Pietermaritzburg, there was like three or four lanes, and then I see they kind of cordoned it off, and it was going to two lanes, and then it was one lane, and then eventually it says detour. Please take the next exit, use alternate route. And they asked like, oh no, not this weekend. Lord, you know, you could have done it last weekend, maybe next weekend, but this weekend, Lord, I'm going. I've got plans. And so even on a weekend, when the highway comes down to one lane going through a town with stop streets, traffic lights, roundabouts, traffic builds up and it feels like you're in peak hour traffic. And if you know anything about a VW Caddy Bucky, it doesn't have power steering. It doesn't have, it doesn't have this hydraulic clutch, and it doesn't come with aircon. So I was pretty annoyed. I was sitting there in the middle of Pietermaritzburg going through all the side roads, and I'm thinking, not what I planned. But anyway, we got back on the main road, and eventually we had a great day. And we got to visit everywhere. But you know, a little while later, I was thinking, if it wasn't for that detour, I probably never would have seen the back of Hilton and all the areas that we went through. Because whenever you go, we want to take the highway, and we go straight to our destination. But on this particular day, I went through, and I kind of enjoyed the scenery. I enjoyed the scenery, seeing some of the older houses and the curio shops along the way that I never would have known existed had I taken the highway. And so even in that detour, you know, I enjoyed it. And sometimes, you know, we get detours. And a lot of the times the detours happen because, you know, you can't control it. They were doing something and I was thinking, what was this detour all about? Did somebody have an accident? Were there protests? Well, it happened to be Eskom and they were changing a power line across the highway on that particular Sunday morning. And but I did take something away in saying, I actually saw more than I bargained on seeing, even though it wasn't what I planned. But now, you know, when you have traffic jams and detours, maybe you're coming from work and there was an accident, or maybe this week there was flooding and you had to take an alternate route. It's not so nice. But when you're in the traffic, you kind of sometimes know the area, or you have your trustworthy phone which has GPS. Now, when I started driving, we had roadmaps. So if you were alone in the car and you had a roadmap, you got a little bit of trouble because you had to read the roadmap and direct yourself and drive at the same time. But if you have gotten lost these days, you have GPS, and generally they know to find the quickest way, and they tell you quickest way, shortest route, all of those things, highways, and you can get out of a detour because you can listen to that voice and they'll guide you in 300 meters, turn left, and at the next roundabout, take the first exit, and so on. But in life, it's a little bit different. And you may be thinking, okay, what do you know about detours in life? You know, you're a pastor, you kind of look like you got things all together and all of that, but it wasn't that way always. And not that I'll ever have everything all together, we all are human, but just want to share a little bit of my life story with you. So many of you would know, I grew up in a Hindu home and a Hindu background, but ever since I started going to church, I realized that there was more. I needed to be doing more for God. I didn't know what that looked like. If you told me then that I would be preaching or I would be in full-time ministry, I was like, no, you're joking. But God had a plan and a purpose. But you see, along my journey in life, I created a few detours for myself. So I was, I always served at a high level. And then I ended up being on staff in the Santon campus. And we were married. And along came our first child. And it was like, yay, I'm in ministry. Life's going well. And our baby was Caitlin. She was 3 or 4 months old, and we found out we're having another child. And just to give you an idea, my kids are 11 months apart. So we didn't plan it that way. It just kind of happened. But it was quite a trying time. And being in ministry, I was thinking, how are we going to cope? We can barely cope with one child at the moment. How are we going to do this with two children? And so I didn't give it thought, and I said, maybe it's time. Maybe this ministry thing wasn't for me. And so I stepped out of ministry. I went back into the working world. I thought things would be okay, you know, financially and all of those things. I'll have more time. But a year later, I found myself feeling this emptiness. I felt, wow, I need to be doing something else. I shouldn't be in the working world. It wasn't about the salary. It wasn't about the hours. But I knew that God had put something inside of me that I had to be doing something more for Him. And so I carried on volunteering, by the way, in this period of a year or so. And I ended up back on staff again. And everything was going well. And it was a year or so later down the line, I had a tragedy strike and my granny passed away. And it kind of shook my world and I kind of felt, you know, maybe I should move back to Durban because, you know, I'm being closer to my family and, you know, I'm taking care of all the other people. What about my family? I should be closer to them and, you know, my parents are getting older. And Rachel had this, my wife had this job opportunity. She worked at Transnet at the time to come down to Durban. You know, they would pay for your moving. It was a better salary for her. We could be back here. This must be from God. So what did I do? I stepped off staff again. And I came down to Durban, but I continued serving in Durban. I think that was 2009, and I kept serving here. And then about a year or so later, you know, I found out, what am I doing again? So you see, I made this mistake a couple of times, and I felt, Lord, I need to be back in ministry. And you'd think I would have learned by the first or the second, but it took me three times, so I'm a little bit slower than most people. Eventually, I got back on staff, and I've been here since 2010. So just to give you a little bit of insight there is like I've created detours in my life that have hindered me. But you know what? I still am where I am. I've taken a bit longer, but I've gotten there. And so this evening, I want to speak to us. And the message title is Dreams, Detours, and Destinations. Now, everybody loves dreams. The dream is like the plan, the vision you have for your life or maybe in your career or for your marriage or your family. And we all love getting those dreams and we're like super hyped up and say, okay, I'm ready to do this. And then we all focus on the destination because we like to get there. We want to have the family or the career or the job or the business or whatever we want to be there. And it's like, okay, I've got the dream. There's the destination. But we all have to deal with the detours. And we don't like dealing with detours because it's tough. And I want to first let you know the definition of a detour. And this is what it says. Definition: a detour is a longer, less direct way to get where you're going. Now, the good thing about that is you're going to get where you're going. The bad thing about that is it's going to take you longer. Now, I realize there are two types of detours. The first one is what I've explained to you already, detours we've created. Now, as I was sharing my story, I'm sure many of you have realized, hey, I've created some detours in my own life. You know, I've made some bad choices or bad decisions and ended up where I actually shouldn't have. The second type of detour is detours others have created for us. Now, this is where we can blame other people. It wasn't my fault. And, you know, one of the people in the Bible that we hear about, and we're going to focus a lot on Joseph, he had detours that other people had created for him. Firstly, his brother sold him into slavery, and we'll cover the story a little later. And then the second one, he ended up in Potiphar's house, and Potiphar's wife wanted to sleep with him. And for doing the right thing, he ended up in prison. And so other people around him created those detours. In an example of someone who created detours for themselves is Samson, and we read about Samson in Judges. And Samson was a man that God had really had a plan and a purpose for. He was going to lead the Israelites. He had good strength. But then he flirted with danger. And he thought he was bigger than that. He thought he could get away with stuff. And he met Delilah. And all things went wrong. And she kept asking him, so what is the source of your power? And he kept playing around. Eventually, he told her what it is. They shaved his head off and they gouged his eyes off. And he ended up being a slave and doing hard labor. But that brings me to my next point. God uses detours. You see, in Samson's life, eventually his hair grew back, and then he had his strength regained. And the one day when they were having this thing in the temple, he actually brought the temple down, and he killed more people on that day than he did in his life. And so you see, even though he made a bad choice and bad decision, God still used it. And even with Joseph, other people that created detours in his life. But what happened? Eventually, he wasn't part of his house. He had one detour, but he did well there. He ended up in prison. That was his second detour. But even there, he did well, and eventually he became the second in charge in Egypt. So God used the detours to develop him and to take him from where he was to where he needed to be. And so today we're going to be looking a lot of on the story of Joseph, and I just want to give you an overview because we don't have time to read the whole of Genesis from 37 into the 40s. So basically, in Genesis 37, we see Joseph is being introduced to us. He's 17 years old. He's working for his older brothers, and we can see that Joseph had the special child syndrome. Now, if you're sitting next to your siblings and they are the special child, just look ahead, all right? Joseph, it says in the Bible, he was his father's favorite. He had a coat made for Joseph, and his brothers didn't like him because of that, because he was the favorite. And so Joseph had dreams. He had two particular dreams that the Bible tells us of. And what happened is the first one about the wheat. He said that his bundle of wheat, and then, you know, his brothers had other bundles, and their bundles were bowing down to his. And his brothers were angry with him, saying, "What are we going to bow down to you?" Because remember, he was one of the younger kids in the family. And then also the next one talks about the sun and the moon and the stars bowing down to him. And then his brothers said, they lost it. They said, "Now this is, we have to get rid of him." And so through a series of events, his brothers actually wanted to kill him, but then he ended up being sold into slavery. And while he was being sold into slavery, he ended up in Potiphar's house. Now, Potiphar was a high-ranking official in Pharaoh's government. So he's actually captain of the guard. And so while he was there as a slave, he ended up doing so well that God, it says that God was with him. But he also, I believe, he worked hard. And what happened was he oversaw the entire Potiphar's household. And then from there, obviously, I spoke to you about what happened with Potiphar's wife. And then she framed him. And then he ended up in prison for doing the right thing. And then in prison, the Bible goes on to tell us that he rose to oversee the prison. And then he met two people, the cupbearer and the baker, the official cupbearer and baker. Now, if you met people that tell you, "I'll remember that favor you've done for me. I owe you one. Don't worry, I got you covered." That's what happened to him. He met the baker and the cupbearer, and they had dreams. And so he told them what the dreams meant. The baker was going to be killed, and he died. And the cupbearer said, "I'll remember you. Don't worry. When I get up there, you've got me." He forgot about him. Two years later, Pharaoh has a dream. And the cupbearer, "Oh, there's this guy in prison. He helped me out. Actually, he can tell you what the dream means." And through a series of events, we find Joseph being brought out of prison and then becoming the second in charge in Egypt and helping the entire Egyptian nation as well as his family from the time of famine. And so that's, in a nutshell, what happened with Pharaoh. So today, what I thought is, you know, Joseph, he handled detours very well. You know, from the word go, as a teenager, a young man, he handled the detours well, because it was at the age of 17 that the story opens. But by the time he gets to be the second in charge, was 30. He was 30. So there was 13 years in between. And so things to remember while we are on the detour. And we're going to learn a lot from the life of Joseph and in Genesis. As it speaks of Joseph, remain faithful. That's the first thing. Remain faithful. You see, it says in Genesis 39:6, "So Potiphar gave Joseph complete administrative responsibility over everything he owned. With Joseph there, he didn't worry about a thing except what kind of food to eat." You know what? The Bible didn't say Joseph complained, "You know, my brothers, you know what they did to me, and yeah, and you know, I'm just going to," he could have tried to escape. He could have tried to have done many things. He grumbled, moaned, all of those things. But no, he remained faithful. You know, because Potiphar was a government official. So he wasn't just any man. He knew he would obviously have wanted his house to be run a certain way. And Joseph, as much as the Bible tells us that God was with him and God gave him favor, I believe that Joseph worked hard. He was competent. He was reliable. He was faithful. And that's part of the reason why he got brought up to oversee all the other people in Potiphar's household. You know, in Matthew 25:21, it tells us, "The master was full of praise. 'Well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling the small amount, so now I'll give you many more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together.'" And that's the parable of the talents, you know, multiplying the talents. And so when you're faced in a detour, remain faithful, because it's going to help you get through it. You know, whether it be in your business, maybe in your marriage, maybe in your health, maybe you've hit a detour this year. Don't give up. Remain faithful. You know, if I think of faithful people, I think of our senior pastors, Pastor Andre and Pastor Vilma. You know, they've been many years in ministry, and they came up from Cape Town. And, you know, many of us would know the story of how church started on the corner of South and Middle Roads in Sandton. But over the years, we've now got five campuses. But over the years, they've had to build buildings, buy properties. They've faced adversity. They've experienced detours. But they've always remained faithful. In fact, because they've remained faithful, we get to sit in a building here and we get to call church Rivers Church Durban North because they were faithful with what God has placed in their hands despite whatever detours. You know, Mother Teresa, the Catholic nun and missionary, said this: be faithful in small things because it is in them that your strength lies. Today, what are some of the areas that you need to remain faithful in? In the area of maybe your business or your work, maybe you've been passed up for a job opportunity or a promotion and you think, I've had it with this company. Give off your best. Remain faithful because God sees that and He will get you through it. Which brings me to my second point. God is using you right where you are. Now, a lot of us would say, you know, when I become the CEO or when I become the manager, then I'll make changes in this place. Then you'll see me do things. But God can use you right where you are. Whether you're now in school or you're at college or you're working, whether you're in the basement in the mailing room or you're upstairs on the third floor, God can use you right where you are. This is what He says in Genesis 39. Before long, the warden put Joseph in charge of all the other prisoners and over everything that happened in the prison. So you noticed Joseph rose from a slave to overseeing everybody in Potiphar's house, and then he ended up in the prison. And what happened there? Obviously, in the prison, he was the new kid on the block. He had to earn his ranks. He had to earn trust and influence. And where have you ever heard a prisoner overseeing other prisoners? He obviously impacted the warden. And right there, if you look at the situation, he actually helped Potiphar. Potiphar was a high-ranking official. By him overseeing Potiphar's house, the first text we read said that Potiphar didn't have to worry about anything except what he had to eat. And even in the prison, he used the warden. We don't know his name, but he obviously helped the warden right where he was. He didn't wait to say, when I get a title, when I get a promotion, I'm going to be able to. No, God used him right there and where he was. And you know, we can impact people at every level of our lives. And right now, we need to look at our lives and say, what opportunities do we have to be used by God right now where we are? Even if we're in a detour, maybe you think, oh, I haven't done so well at college this year, or I haven't done so well at school this year. God can still use that to turn your situation around. It's not the end of the road. It brings me to my third point. It is preparation for your destination. You know, with Joseph, he started off in the household, which wasn't so big, right, to manage a household. But then he began to manage the prison, which was a bigger task. And eventually, God got him to manage the country, to be the second in charge. So you can see the progression from what God did. He was faithful, and God was preparing him. You know, from managing a house to managing a country, that's a big thing. But God used the prison in between and all these things along the road to develop him for what He had planned for him. God is using your situations and your circumstances now to plan and to prepare you for what you have ahead. You know, Pastor Vilma wrote a book called Small Beginnings. Don't despise small beginnings. If you're in a small beginning now, God can create something amazing when you're faithful in the little. And we're going to read from Samuel. I'll look at the life of David. You know, a lot of us think that, hey, we read the story of David and Goliath. It's a nice kid zone or Sunday school story about how this little kid and he killed the giant and all the adults were standing around and they actually didn't have enough guts or the strength to do it. But God was preparing David all along. You know, when he came to that day and he used his slingshot, he wasn't just saying, oh, I'm going to hope it hits there or God's going to help me. No, if we read scripture, it tells us God was preparing him. Let's read in 1 Samuel 17. It says, but David persisted. I've been taking care of my father's sheep and goats, he said. When a lion or bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock, I go after it with a club and rescue the lamb from its mouth. If the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw and club it to death. I've done this to both lions and bears, and I'll do it to this pagan Philistine too. For he was, for has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from the Philistine." You see, God was preparing David all along for that big day. What is God using in you to prepare you for your big day? You know, you may think, "Oh, but I'm in the bottom there. I'm in the mailing room. I just do admin." God can use that. He'll use it along the way. Trust him for promotion. Trust him for breakthrough. But he will use what you're going through right now. If you're going through illness, you're going through tragedy, keep remaining faithful. God can use that for you to help somebody else later on. You know, I was thinking of Malishni. She's a short lady on our staff team. And if anyone's, the appropriate saying is dynamite comes in small packages, you would know. And so, you know, she was a volunteer a number of years ago, and she was sitting in my office, and said, "I need you to help me make calls." And she said, "No, I can't do these calls. What do I say? I can't say it." And we kind of had this back and forth, and she said, "You know, maybe I should." And I said, no, you need to do it. And I encouraged her. And, you know, she was reserved to do it, but eventually she got to doing it. You know, today, she's in charge of our pastoral care department, and now she's teaching other people to make calls, just like how I showed her. And so whatever you're doing, God's going to use. Now, this point's quite important. Hold no resentment. It's not as easy as it sounds. Now, Joseph had every reason to be resentful. Imagine when he found out that his brothers were there. I tell you what I would have done. It's like, "Guards, where are you? Come, I'm going to pay you back for what you've done to me." That's our natural instinct. But let's read how Joseph responded. He says this: "Joseph could no longer stand it no longer. There were many people in the room, and he said to his attendants, 'Out, all of you.' So he was alone with his brothers when he told them who he was. Then he broke down and wept. He wept so loudly the Egyptians could hear him, and the word of it quickly carried to Pharaoh's palace. 'I'm Joseph,' he said to his brothers. 'Is my father still alive?' But his brothers were speechless. They were stunned to realize that Joseph was standing there in front of him." What a different response from a natural one. He held no resentment. In fact, his heart broke for them. He couldn't hold keeping the secret from them. And one of the first things, "Is my father okay?" And he treated his brother from the story with kindness. He helped them. Eventually, the family moved there, and they were actually helped through Joseph so that during the years of famine, they had enough to eat. You know, I think of Nelson Mandela. He was a giant in our country, and he's known worldwide. But he spent 27 years in prison. He faced many extreme and harsh conditions. He had every reason to hold resentment, but he didn't. I found two interesting articles, and I'm going to read them. But the first one goes, "Mandela's 27 years in prison were dominated by tremendous hardship. There were freezing winter nights, suffocating summer days, poor food, and back-breaking labor. He slept on a thin mat on a stone floor for most of his time behind bars. For many years, his wife was allowed to visit only rarely, and his children not at all." But this is the second article tells us about his first speech. And it says, it opens like this: "I greet you all in the name of peace, democracy, and freedom for all." A 71-year-old Mandela said in his first public speech in 27 years, "I stand here before you not as a prophet, but as a humble servant of you, the people." Devoid of self-pity, the article says, he reached out to the same people who jailed him. Here's a man that could have had resentment, had every right to be resentful. But his actions created something in the country. People to stand together as one nation. Because if he came out with resentment, our country would look a whole lot different. We could have ended up in civil war, or whatever would have happened then. But he handled that with no resentment. And God was able to use him in not only our country, but in the world. And there's a quote by Carrie Fisher, and she was Princess Leia, well known for that. She played Princess Leia in Star Wars, and this is what she said: "Resentment is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die." Now, when we hold resentment, that's what happens. Many times, the person that we're holding the resentment towards, they've moved on. They don't even know why you're not talking to them or why you are so bitter towards them in the first place. But what is happening? It's killing us on the inside. and no one else knows it, and no one else can stop it except you and I. We got to let that resentment go. You know, when it comes to family, spouse, siblings, parents, when we hold resentment, we stop talking to them. You know, when we hold resentment towards the country, I'm in this situation because of the government or the it kills us. Everybody else moves along. My question to you today is, are you holding resentment? What are you going to do? Maybe it means making a call after the service to release somebody because they don't even know that you're holding resentment to them. Maybe you need to, in your heart, say, Lord, I forgive them. I let it go. They've created my detour, Lord. But you know what? You're bigger than that. You're going to help me. Brings me to number 5. Don't let your detour derail you. John C. Maxwell, the famous author and leadership authority, said this. One of the major keys to success is to keep moving forward on the journey, making the best of the detours and interruptions, turning adversity into advantage. You see, I use the quote by Carrie Fisher, and she's well known for the role she played in Star Wars. And everybody can look at her and say, wow, what a great actress. She's done so well, you know. But if you look into her story, many of you might not know that in the early 1980s, she battled with alcohol and drug abuse. Actually, I read an article that said she actually overdosed on some tranquilizers. And she happened to call a friend of hers. And two of her friends actually got to her in time. And they rushed her to the nearest hospital where they had pumped her stomach and they got rid of all the drugs and the alcohol and everything, and she survived. But you see, she didn't let that detour derail her. Because what she ended up doing was writing a book called Postcards from the Edge, which became a movie, and that Meryl Streep acted in that. And she went on to do many other things amongst acting. And then we know her now as the role that she played in Star Wars. You know, she passed away in 2016. And a year later in 2017, the December of 2017, the last movie she acted in, Star Wars, was released and was dedicated to her. You see, that story could have gone very differently. If she had let that detour derail her, she could have ended up as a drug addict. She could have ended up, and we would never would have heard of her or known of her, and somebody else would have played Princess Leia in Star Wars. But because she had handled her detour well, because she didn't let it derail her, she was able to complete and end her life successfully and strongly. And it doesn't matter how your life starts or where you find yourself right now. Don't let your detour derail you. You know what? Zig Ziglar said this. Failure is a detour, not a dead-end street. Don't let your detour be a full stop. Don't let it be the end. Because let it be the comma. Another paragraph. The next chapter, the next book in your life. Because we've seen if you handle detours correctly, it's just a bump in the road. And as we've discovered, a detour doesn't mean you're not going to get there. It just means you're going to take a little longer. And you know what? We're so focused on running this race. And sometimes we can start strong. Actually, we all start strong. But somewhere along the line, we get a bump in the road. We get a curve. We get a detour. And it slows us down. But it doesn't mean that we're not going to end the race. And it's more important that we finish strong, that we end strong, that we find out what our plan, what God's plan and purpose for our lives are, so that we don't end up derailing ourselves. Now, I've kept the last point as we come to a close. I think it's the most important thing. You see, all of the other points we can do. Not derail, remain faithful, know that God is using us, and do all the right things. But point 6, know that God is with you. Twice in Genesis it tells us, first in Genesis 39:2 it says, the Lord was with Joseph. So he succeeded in everything he did as he served in the home of his Egyptian masters. And then it goes on in Genesis 39:21, it says, but the Lord was with Joseph in prison and showed him his faithful love, and the Lord made Joseph a favorite with the prison warden. You see, Joseph knew God was with him because he had a relationship with God. In fact, it tells us that even when he had to tell Pharaoh what the dreams meant, he said, I can't do it, but my God can. And so we know that Joseph had a relationship with God. You see, in life, when we go down the wrong road and we have a detour, unexpected turn in the road, and we're driving along, in this day and age, I told you, it's easy. You pull out your smartphone, you've got Waze, you've got Google Maps, and they'll direct you, you know, turn left again, and you'll be back on the main road. Or go down the nearest roundabout and take the second exit, and you'll be back on your way in the right direction. You'll be away from the detour, you'll be taking the right path, and you're going down there. But you see, the challenge is in life. We also need a GPS. God has given us that GPS in the form of the Holy Spirit. You see, a lot of the times, I don't know about you, but in my life, I know I'm going ahead and God's saying, turn left. And I was like, no, but that's the shortcut, Lord. I think that's a better way, Lord. I'm going to go there. But you know what happens when we have God in our lives and we keep going and we ignore the turn left or the turn right? You know what the GPS signal does? Recalculating. Turn left at the next one. He's like, okay, Lord, I'm going to listen now. I got to go that way. I tried doing it on my own. It didn't work. I ended up further than I thought I was going to get to or further from my destination. I'm going to turn right. But you see, if you don't have God, and if you don't have a roadmap or a GPS, you can have the fastest car on the planet. You can have the sports car. You can have a full tank of petrol. You can have all the luxuries. But you're going nowhere. Because you don't know where you're headed. You're lost, and you're going to go straight, you're going to go left, you're going to go right. You're going to end up in probably a different direction from what you should have been going in. And in our lives, if we don't have God, no matter what we do, no matter how successful we are, no matter how many cars we drive, no matter how many people we employ, no matter all the good deeds we do, it's futile. Because without God, we're nothing. Without God, we don't know what the plan and the purpose for our lives are. Because God, the Creator, put it inside of us to say, listen, I've created you for a plan and a purpose. And only when you get to know Him, then you know that plan and purpose. And He can direct you. He can speak into your life and say, go this way, my son. This way, my daughter. Turn left here. I've got this plan for you. And even when storms come and detours come, no, avoid that. The river's flooded ahead. Turn left here. We're going to take the longer route, but it's going to get you there. And so even when we make mistakes, God can redirect us. But we need to know God. That's the most important thing. Because otherwise, we can do all of the other things in our own strength, and it wouldn't add any value to our lives.
We hope you have been blessed and inspired by this message.